Hey Dad, how are you? It's me, just your daughter you don't know. Ring me back when you can.
Welcome to Missing Pieces, MPE Life. I'm your host, Don Anderson. This is Season 3, Episode 11, The Greatest Act of Love. And this song is, of course, the great Corey Goodrich, author, songwriter, artist, actor. She can do it all. You can find the song, Hey Dad, co-written by she and I, anywhere you find music. I'd like to thank all of you who supported this podcast by purchasing the cool-ass Missing Pieces merch. Go to missingpieces.printify.me and get yours today. To get in touch with Don, email me at Don, N as in Nancy, P-E at iCloud.com or on Instagram at NPE_life_podcast.
So my name is Rebecca Horning and I currently live in the Bay Area outside of San Francisco. I was born in 1978. So I grew up in Northern California, but I was born in San Diego, and we moved to Humboldt County when I was 2.5. They were very young. My mom was a teen mom. I sort of knew she was young because people often would question, like, is she your sister and stuff like that. My mom loved that. So she had me when she was 17. It was me, my sister, and my mom and dad.
And what's the birth order there?
So I'm 2.5 years older than my sister. And there's just us. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And for the early part of my childhood, and my dad was a auto mechanic. When I was about 7, I remember the day so well. I feel like it was definitely a weekend day because my mom and dad were both home and it was daytime. They said, Rebecca, come in here. We want to talk to you. So my sister was playing in the other room and I come out and they look very serious. My dad's like, come over here. And he pulled me on his lap and my mom's crying. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Like, I don't even know if I've seen my mom cry. And she basically shows me a picture of a guy and says, we have to tell you that dad, Gene, he's not your real dad. Your real dad is Bruce, and shows me this picture. And grandma, you know, grandma and grandpa Horning, that's my dad's last name, my last name, they're not your real grandparents. And I was like, what do you mean real? Like, what do you mean? And they were like, well, he's your dad and they're your grandparents, but not by blood. And I remember just like, what? Like my whole world sort of got tilted on its axis in a way. And I was just like, so confused. They use the word real, and I think that was the best they could do at that time. Like, I don't think they understood the implications to a child's mind of what that means. I feel like this was the huge turning point. Like, there was, like, my childhood before knowing this and then, like, the childhood after knowing this. And even though we talked about it in that moment and it was super impactful to me, we didn't really ever talk about it again.
Like, what did you feel when they said he's not your real father?
I think I felt othered. I felt like my sister, instantly I was like, oh, she's directly related to him and my grandparents, who I totally always called my grandparents. They were my grandparents, you know, his parents. So I felt othered. I felt separate. I felt a little different. And then you know, am I still loved? Am I still the like, am I equal? Am I still as important to everybody? Does this make me less than? And it's funny because in hindsight, you know, looking back as an adult, talking about it a lot in therapy, my therapist said, you know, in the 80s, there was like a push of telling kids, you know, of adopted kids when they're quote unquote old enough to understand. So I think they thought that I was at the age where I would understand. And then of course, looking at that photo of that guy and thinking like, whoa, that's my dad. Like, but like Gene's my dad. Gene's like here and he raised me and he loves me and he like taught me how to ride a bike and like he's my dad. But then I'm like, this is my dad. So it was really kind of confusing. It was a lot.
So it sounds like that your parents were actually trying to do the right thing.
For sure.
And just use the wrong words.
For sure. This is definitely no. I've definitely come to terms with all of that stuff. Like, I don't blame them for, I mean, that just has built-in abandonment anyways. Just hearing like this, I forgot this other thing. They said, this is Bruce. He didn't want anything to do with us. You know, my mom said that to me. And I remember that kind of like a gut punch, like, why? Like, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with us? You know? But we never really were able to talk about it again. And it definitely seemed like an off topic or a off limit topic.
They showed you this picture of your biological dad and said, this is him. He didn't want anything to do with this. Did they say he lives here, he lives there, like you can contact him, or they didn't say, what did they say?
So my mom was pregnant when she was 17, or had me, sorry, pregnant when she was 16, had me when she was 17, and she was a junior in high school. So to finish out high school, she did night school, and she met my dad, Gene, there when I was about 5 or 6 months old. And, you know, she's a teenager, she has a baby, but he was just super into it, which is so cute because she would tell me stories of like, he would say, hey, you want to go on a picnic? And she'd be like, great. And then he'd say, can we bring the baby? And she'd be like, I guess. I guess so.
We don't want any romance. We can.
He was super bonded to me, which is so sweet when I think about that, about, you know, like this 17, 18 year old guy and just being bonded to this baby. And he was like totally into race cars and a mechanic and just like, I don't know, just knowing who he is, it's just a sweet side of him that he was like made to be a dad. He's just a great dad. My mom tells the story of when his parents found out he was dating a girl with a baby. They were at the racetrack, and his dad was a crew chief on a racing team in San Diego. And so my grandma, she said, well, should we stay down here? Maybe they were a couple hours away from San Diego. Maybe we should get a room, like a hotel room. And my mom said, well, I don't know. I need to call and check on the baby. And my grandma was like, baby, what? Like, oh my gosh. So that's how she found out. My dad hadn't told her that he was dating. Like he let them build their relationship before they told her, which I think is so funny. I was raised, you know, that these are my grandparents, and he legally adopted me when I was about a year old. My mom told me that you know, when she told Bruce that she was pregnant, he denied it, like, no way, that's my baby. And she said, I know it's your baby. Then when she met Gene and he wanted to adopt me, she had Bruce, told Bruce, I need you to sign away paternity, like sign these adoption papers because his name was on the birth certificate. And he also, the scared teenager, I don't know, what was going on for him. But from that point on, I thought about him. In the picture, like, that's the image I always saw when I thought, like, oh, I wonder what he's doing, or I wonder what he looks like. And I just pictured the like 17-year-old picture that she showed me that day. So I knew his first and last name. And my mom kept a like an index card, like those recipe boxes, you know, mm-hmm. with the little index cards with all her phone numbers in there. And I remember sneaking into it and looking, like finding a card with his name and his phone number. And I was like, oh my gosh. So it was constantly on my mind. I don't think I ever had the courage to dial it until I was probably 12 or 13 when I was in San Diego visiting my grandma. I would sometimes call and hang up the phone number. And sometimes I would call and ask for him. I think I did that two or three times, because also that was phone book time. So I would also go into the phone book in San Diego and call so many different numbers with that last name and ask for him, ask for Bruce. I mean, I had no plan what I was going to say to him, but there was just this, I don't know if yearning, longing, whatever it is, curiosity, deep curiosity to talk to him, like, hey, did you know I exist, or why did you not want anything to do with me? I think ultimately that was really what I wanted to know, you know, because as a kid you internalize that stuff, even though it's not about you, you feel like it's something you did.
And did he ever answer, or did anybody say, yeah, he's here?
One time somebody paused a long time, and I was like, oh, this is it. And she said, I haven't seen Bruce in years. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm talking to somebody who's talked to him, somebody who knows him, you know? And I was like, okay, thanks, bye. And I just hung up. And oh, they wanted to know, can I tell him who's calling? And I think one time I even said, this is Rebecca. And then I just hung up, you know? It's like, oh my gosh, I was so nervous. And I also have a lot of memories of, you know, so I had all this internalized abandonment, all this internalized questioning, like maybe even I would go as far as saying shame around it. I think it was shame because I couldn't talk about it. So I was just left to my own devices to process it in my child brain. It was like, it was a loyalty thing too, I think, to my dad, Gene, my dad who adopted me. You know, he was the one there putting in the time, raising his family. And so it felt sometimes like if I talked about it, it would be disrespectful almost to him. And I would feel betrayed, like I was betraying him in a way. So when I would tell people, you know, my dad, Gene, who they knew, like my dad that you've met, he's not my biological dad. Or I would even sometimes say real, because I was just that was the language I was given. I would say he's not my real dad. He adopted me when I was, you know, 9 months old or whatever, 1 year old. And they'd say, oh, so he's your stepdad. And I'd be like, no, not my stepdad. That's different in my mind. That's different. He's the only dad I have, even though somebody else is my biological dad. Like, he's the only dad I've ever known. So a stepdad to me seems like you have one dad and then you get a second dad. This is like, right. No, not a stepdad. And my mom would always, no, not a stepdad. She was really adamant that was never used. That could never, the way that didn't encapsulate him enough.
Yeah. I agree with you and your mom. It's not the correct term.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. Like, a stepdad is a second dad, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's saying you already have one. I can tell you that when I talk about internalized shame and abandonment, it was something my mom wasn't religious, but my grandma was, her mom. And I got really into youth group and going to these Christian camps. And for some reason, those Christian camps can get super emotional. There's like, you know, the praise worship section with the music, and they like, I don't know. I'm not religious at all now.
Was that like Pentecostal or like?
No, it was like non-denominational. Like they got, it was like, there was a complete method recipe, I think, to get kids, you know, pumped on Jesus or whatever. And they would do, it was very, very performative with this music. And then there would be like a full band, drums, guitar, and then they would drop the music real low. And like, just the little guitar, just a little drum. And then the, you know, pastor, usually a younger guy, would sort of do a little sermon and, you know, ask people to come up and, yeah, come up and let people pray around you, something on your heart. And that thing always on my heart that they would talk about. And I was like, God, it's like this thing. And it would get me so emotional. I was so young. I was like between the ages of 11 to probably 13. I stopped going when I was about 14. I would just cry and kind of talk about it there, but then never, you know, come home and never talk about it again. Didn't tell my mom that I was there crying about it. It was just always those moments where when that music would be playing and I would be thinking about Bruce and that picture and like, what's wrong with me? Just kind of all of it. And just,
They said what's heavy on your heart kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so. It would just be a place that I was able to access it, but it wasn't like therapy, like where I actually was able to process it or conceptualize it or talk to anybody. I was just crying, you know, because I don't think I really ever cried about it before that. We didn't talk about it. And yeah, so I know that it was always there in my mind and it was always a deep curiosity and yearning, I guess, to meet him, I think was what I wanted. But I would say that, you know, I definitely, I don't know how deep to go into this part, but I got into, you know, drugs and alcohol at kind of a young age. I was probably 15, 16 when that started. And I got sober, went to rehab, and I'm in a 12-step program when I was 21. And started a journey in therapy, you know, after getting sober. And I would say that it was still there. It's coming up in therapy. You know, probably didn't really process much of that at all, what I was using. But then when I got sober, it was a huge theme in my work in therapy. And I checked out a private investigator on my own. I was maybe 23, called and just kind of asked what that process would be like and the cost. It was a little too, the cost was too prohibitive from where I was in my life at that time. But then I ran into a friend when I was 27, 28, who was a private investigator for like a workman's comp thing. And I said, Justin, would you be able to find my biological dad? He's like, oh my God, I would love to. And I said, okay, well, I called a private investigator and he told me it could be, you know, he might be able to, he might not be able to. He's like, well, let me go see what I can do. Cause he, you know, they have other search capabilities. And, so he found him like that day and gave me this huge printout of sort of his, not like his rap sheet or anything, but just all of his different phone numbers and previous addresses. And we were kind of trying to put together pieces of these different names with the same last that shared his last name. He's like, I think this is his either wife or ex-wife. And then I think these are his kids. And this might be a sister. There was just so many people with the last name and then trying to ascertain like who was what age range and that kind of thing. Yeah, I started cold calling immediately. I was so excited. Like, I was just so excited. I mean, I remember my roommate at the time, she was just like, what are you going to say? What are you going to do? Like, what if you meet him? Or what if you do talk to him? What are you going to say? And I'm like, I have no idea. Like, I hadn't really thought that far. And I don't really know what my end goal was. I think I was just like, I just want to like talk to him. I just want to hear his voice and see that he's a real person. And then probably maybe deep down, if I got super honest, I'd want to ask him why he left, or why, you know, what was going on for him at that time, and why he never reached out since then. So I got to work. I started calling. I had been a former telemarketer, but I just was like, oh, I can cold call. I'm good at cold calling. I have no problem with, you know, striking up a combo. I learned that he was one of 10. My mom had told me he had a lot of brothers and sisters, but I don't think I realized he had 10. Or maybe he had 10. He's one of 11. So I talked to one of his sisters, and I first talked to her husband. So I called and said, hi, is Bruce there? And he kind of paused and said, you know what? I haven't seen Bruce in probably a year and a half. And I was like, oh, okay. But in my head, I'm like, oh, they know Bruce. You know, they know Bruce. This is it. And I was like, okay. And he said, but if I see him, do you want me to tell him who's calling? And I said, well, I don't know how exactly to say this, but I think I'm his daughter. And he's like, long, long, long pause. And then he said, my wife, Liz, she's at work and she's going to be home in 45 minutes. I know she would like to talk to you. Because he was just sort of like, wait, what do I do with this? This is his brother-in-law, right? And he said, can I have her call you back? And I was like, sure. And she's like, sure enough, like the minute she was like, what, who are you? What's going on? You know, like we talked probably for over 2 hours for that first day. And
did she know about you?
No, she didn't. She didn't know about me. And there's, I think at the time there was like 27 nieces and nephews. So like cumulative 27 cousins. She was like, oh my gosh, it's such a huge family. I can't believe I have another niece. I mean, she was like fully into it, but you know, of course, tentative too, like a piece of her, but then so excited. It was really sweet. And she said, you have to send me a picture. And this was 2007, 2006 even. So I think it was like, oh, I'll send you a photo. And that was harder than it sounds. It wasn't like I could email a photo from my phone. I had to, you know, download a photo and email it to her. I don't know. I remember being like, oh, which photo do I send her? And then she called me right away in the morning. She was like, oh my gosh, you look just like my dad, like your grandpa. And I was like, no way. I look like somebody, you know, I've always been told I look just like my mom. Mm-hmm. And so to hear I also could look like somebody else, I was like, no way. She's like, your skin color and your nose. And I was like, whoa, this is so cool. And we, you know, she and I kind of formed this kind of instant bond. And then she's like, I can't wait to tell my sister. She's super close with her. A lot of them all live in San Diego still. So she ends up calling all her sisters. They probably do like a big conference call or something. And her one sister, Sharon, who was the oldest, sort of the matriarch, because their parents had passed away. So she was the oldest of all these 10, 11 kids, whatever. And she knew about me. And she said that her and her mom, my grandma, went to the hospital when I was born and saw me. And but they never told anybody else in the family. And the funny thing is that my half-sister, Christina, Bruce's daughter, I met her. Yeah, sorry. I don't want to bounce around here, but it's hard to. you know, when they were at her birth, 8 months after my, you know, when they saw her born, because I think my mom and her mom were pregnant. They had like a month overlap. When she came out, they looked at each other kind of like, oh, that was Bruce's daughter, me, because they saw Christina and thought we looked so much alike.
Mm.
They were like, wow. So that was interesting. I was really excited.
So it's like, so funny that they went to the hospital, like,
and they saw me in the window.
Mm-hmm. And like, meh.
Yeah, left. I don't know. I mean, it was a really like balancing act of like, you know, we're talking almost 30 years ago. Like, why did you do that thing 30 years ago? Like, I'm not here. I wasn't there to persecute or judge or like question.
Right.
All of that. I was like, Bruce said I wasn't his and they believed him or wanted to believe him or whatever. That's fine. I mean, I at this point I was like, oh my gosh, I have a family that I look like. That's so cool. And then maybe I get to meet Bruce. That was like the golden egg, even though, you know, I had no idea who he was or anything. But I knew that they told me he has 3 daughters and a son. And so I had 4 half siblings. And he was married to their mom, and they were no longer together. And that, you know, he had been kind of somewhat estranged from the family for the last year or two. So fast forward maybe 5 or 6 months, you know, everybody, we all want to meet each other. And I plan a trip. One of my childhood best friends lived also in San Diego. So I went down and stayed with her and got to meet this family, which was so cool. Like my family that I grew up with, my, you know, immediate family, there was just me and my sister, my mom and dad. And then my mom was 1 of 2. My dad was 1 of 3. So I didn't grow up with like a lot of cousins. I had 4 total cousins in my life growing up. And then going to this like sort of mini family reunion with so many people, it was really cool, super overwhelming, but Bruce didn't come. he was contacted and made aware of, you know, me and that I met his family. I was coming down to meet his family. And at first he said, yes, I'll come to this barbecue. And then he didn't show up.
And had you talked to him at that point?
No.
No, it was just third party?
Yeah, it was third party, yeah. He was sort of hard to pin down at that point, I guess.
And how did that make you feel that he didn't show up?
Okay, so at that point in my journey, it kind of devastated me. I was really like re-traumatized in a way. Like I was like, dude, I kind of felt like, I don't want anything from you, like big. I'm not asking for even a relationship. I'm not asking for money. I'm not asking for anything other than meeting me for like, give me like an hour. Like that's all I'm asking for. And I think the way I felt at that point was it's the least you could do. And I kind of like cried and pleaded with one of his brother-in-laws, like, dude, can you please help me kind of talk him into this? And I said, it'd be one thing if I was here angry or I was like coming for some type of ask or revenge or whatever it could be that would prevent somebody from like meeting their daughter. I don't know what it was, but I said, I'm not here for anything except meeting him. Like I'll meet him at the IHOP. I'll meet him at, have him come to this. I'll do whatever. And finally he agreed, like literally the day I was leaving.
So she met her biological dad at his brother's house.
And so we drove up there and sat outside and talked. And I was like, kind of like going in and out of my body a little bit. Like, oh my God, this is so crazy. Like you've literally been on my mind my whole life. Like this picture, of course, of him when he was 17, and now I'm looking at this, 50-year-old whatever man, and it's, it was just wild. And I didn't have tons of expectations. I had maybe a little bit of expectations, and I was just like grateful. So I just kind of came at it from a place of like gratitude that thank you so much for meeting me. I really appreciate it. We chatted about my childhood. It kind of was a little bit surface. He seemed so nervous. He was so nervous. And we chatted, for maybe 2 hours. And then that was it. I had to fly home. So, it was anticlimactic, really. All that buildup over those years. And I had made it this thing. And then I remember having this realization, like, oh my God, he's just a human. He's just a man. And he was a kid. Like in my head, I'm like, what was wrong with me growing up, right? As a kid, what was wrong with me? Why didn't he want anything to do with me? All of that internalized shame and abandonment. And then I meet him and it was like pretty instantaneous. That stuff like just disappeared. It was like, it was such a gift to meet him and realize that it was like it required seeing him in person for some reason for me to like close that loop in my brain and my heart, I guess. Just he did the best he could, and whatever, wherever it was he was at that moment, that this is what he was able to do. And he seemed like he was still kind of struggling a little bit to find his path in life, and I was able to just sort of see the whole picture in that moment, and it was very healing, I should say.
And then did you guys become close after that?
No, there was, I would say I kind of became close with his sisters, my aunts and my sisters. That was like a very fun part of this whole journey, was meeting my half sisters and my aunts. They were just such a fun group of really, they had just such a tight bond and they were just so fun. And one of my aunts was a nurse. And I would say that going through this and meeting her inspired me to become a nurse. It, super, super subtly, I don't know, but it was something I hadn't thought about doing until I met her. And I think offloading this huge weight of going through this whole experience kind of offloaded a huge like emotional burden that I had been carrying. And then I was able to kind of like launch, like, okay, what do I want to do with my life? Like, not like, oh, this is done and it doesn't exist still, but it reframed it for me. It was so, so healing having that experience. I'm so grateful that he eventually met me. Dude, this is all I wanted, was just to meet you and sort of feel your energy and like get a vibe. And I'm so grateful. I know I keep saying that, but I really was.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I am still. Yeah. I mean, I should also say, like, I really did become close with this family. Like they would do these trips. I went to Colorado Springs with like all the cousins and like 8 of the aunts. Like, I just felt so bonded to them. They just really like welcomed me into the family. It was really, really cool.
So Rebecca became a nurse, and then in 2011, she had her first child. And then around 2018, because of that child, she did 23andMe test. As a matter of fact, her whole family did a 23andMe test. Everybody on her mom's side, her mom, her grandma, her husband, everyone.
My maternal side was pretty much mapped out. And then I reached out to my aunt, Bruce's sister, and said, hey, Do you know any, I had some, you know, second, third cousins, 5% or whatever. And I said, hey, do you know this, this, or this person? And she said, oh, you have to reach out to Dawn. She's the family genealogist. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I text her and I said, hey, do you know any of these? She said, those surnames aren't in my ancestry. We're all in ancestry. You should do an ancestry. And I was like, yeah, okay. She goes, oh, but Jamie, my cousin, she's on 23andMe. Look for her. And I said, okay, great. So I look for her, this cousin of mine, and she's not coming up. And she said, oh, she might be set to private. Let me tell her to look for you. I said, yeah, my profile is totally public. So she has her look for me. And she can't find me. I don't come up. So then she had her one other family member on the side looked for me also, and I didn't come up. So then I'm like, huh, that's weird. So then Dawn immediately starts digging into those surnames in my 23andMe. She starts researching them in Ancestry and doing her own little sleuthing. And then she said, these surnames seem to all be in that lineage there. So then I text my mom and I said, do any of these names ring a bell to you? And I listed like three different surnames. She said, no, why? And at first I wasn't going to have this conversation with her until I did Ancestry, where I could see if I was related to this family at all. But it was just too weird that these two people weren't coming up that were for sure on 23andMe. So I said, well, mom, none of Bruce's family is coming up on my 23andMe. And she's like, really? That's weird. And I said, yeah, it is weird. Do you think that there could have been anybody else that could have been my dad? And she said, well, there was this one guy one time. And, you know, I knew him from school. I would give him rides to the skate park. And it was like one time. And I was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, one time. That's all it takes. What's his name? She said, gosh, his name was, she goes, well, she says his first name and then says, let me go look in my yearbook. And I said, great. So she goes and looks in her yearbook. She finds him and she goes, oh my God. And I'm like, what? She sends me his picture with his name next to it. And that last name was one of the three that I had asked her earlier. Do any of these names sound familiar? And I was like, oh my God, that name's in my 23andMe all over. She calls me and she's crying and she's like, she goes, no way. And I'm like, mom, it's in the 23andMe. Like,
was it an uncommon name? Uncommon?
It was kind of uncommon, yeah. And yeah, I've never met anybody with this last name. And she said, she's like, but I just knew it was Bruce. And I'm like, she was just hysterically crying. She felt horrible. And I was like just shocked because I never really vetted, you know, like why she said it was Bruce. I sort of think maybe she wiped out this one occurrence out of her memory of a 16-year-old girl. I feel like it was an honest mistake. And she feels, and I think in that moment felt so bad. And then she felt really bad towards Bruce. She felt they have since communicated and he's been super understanding and super kind about it. I told my aunt, you know, I told my aunt Dawn of the genealogy Facebook internet sleuth. She was like, you're still our niece. Like, it doesn't matter. And
so I mean, this I've has been like 11 years in their family.
17.
Okay.
Yeah. Their long lost niece. So It was like so sweet. It was such a sweet response. And, but then of course I kind of felt a little guilty, or I felt, you know, bad that I was like, oh my God, I just whirlwinded these people's lives and, you know, insisted Bruce meet me and had all these demands on him. And now I feel so bad because, like, I'm not even his daughter. But I'll tell you, the gift of that meeting still, like, carried on. Like, this discovery was like, had almost like, it was shock, and I was like, what? And that's crazy. But I did not have any of that emotional weight like I did before.
Yeah, I mean, it's understandable, because the fact that you aren't his daughter didn't change the fact that your mom thought he was the father. She told him was the father. He rejected you.
Right.
And let the other man adopt you. And you right. know, so it didn't change any of that. And that, exactly. And sorry if rejected you is a harsh word.
No, no. I mean, that's the most simple term for it, I think. Yeah. Right. He rejected the entire thing. Yeah. Yeah. Not me on a personal level. I know that part. But just right. He was like, yeah.
Interesting how he... I mean, I guess he wouldn't be the first father who denied paternity, but it's interesting that he was right.
I know.
And it's interesting, like, when you first told me this, I was like, oh, he didn't want to be a teenage father, but then he had a baby 8 months yeah. later, right?
Yeah. And he married her. He married that mom. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So interesting.
I know.
You know, it's just so fascinating to me. Like, my wife always gives MPEs shit just to me, really. But, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, we meet these new family members and it's like, oh, you like oxygen? I like oxygen.
Yeah.
You know, we see all these things in common.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny how you look just like.
They said I looked like their paternal, like my paternal grandpa.
Yeah. And the other sister when she were born. But it's just...
Yeah, exactly. They said that when the second girl was born, they looked at her and were like, oh, Rebecca was his. Like, they look so much alike. I know, it's so crazy. And it's funny because I saw the resemblance too. I saw, like, the, you know, my nose is a little different than my mom's. And I'm like, oh, I so see... the similarity in my nose with Bruce. It's just so interesting. I was just shocked. I was like, what? And one of my sisters was so sweet. And, like, you know, we would still reach out if we were in each other's areas. And then the other one was kind of harsh and was like, why, like, what, like, what's wrong with your mom? Like, why would she... Like, she doesn't know whose baby it is. And I was like, dude, like, back off. My mom was literally a child. And it's not like she manipulated him into, like, paying child support. Like, she, all she asked for him to do was release rights so that somebody could raise me. Like, I mean, I was like, no, I'm not letting you judge my mom right now. I was very protective over that. Like, this is not what this is. Like, this was a completely honest mistake. And I totally believe my mom. There was no, other than Bruce thinking he had a child he didn't raise, like, there wasn't a huge burden on him, really. Right. It was like, we didn't ask him for anything.
So you found out who your almost said real father. So you found out who your biological father was. Is?
Well, I found out. Yeah. So I found out who he is in the yearbook. And then Dawn did some diving into, like, Facebook and Ancestry. And she's like, oh, like, literally within a few hours, she's like, oh, I think these are your half brothers, and sends me, like, their Facebook profiles. And I think,
I think this is your dad or whatever, and found some bio. And I was like, whoa, okay. So I reached out to the brothers on Facebook. You know, I don't know anything. So I thought, oh, well, I could start here. And I just sent a message like, hey, is your dad, you know, CJ? I'm going to just call him CJ. And he said,
this was 2019?
No, this was like, this was literally like a year ago.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of new. He said, yeah, it was probably like exactly a year ago. He said, he is actually. And I said, and he's like, and why are you asking? Like, who are you? And I said, well, I think he's my biological father. And my mom and him went to high school together in San Diego. And I responded like, well, my dad never lived in San Diego. He's only lived in like Ohio and Colorado or whatever. And I was like, okay, well, that's weird. You know, I was kind of surprised. So then I was sort of about to go back to Don like, oh, I think we have the wrong guy. And so he responds like maybe 30 minutes later and says, oh, wait, I just asked my mom. I guess he did live in California for like a year when in high school. And I said, oh, okay. And then I sent a his yearbook picture and I said, was this him? And he's like, oh, that is him. So he's like, okay, so who are you again? Like, what's going on? And I said, I sort of told him, like, it's kind of hard to explain, but so I was raised by this dad and I was always told it was this dad. And I did 23andMe like 5 years ago, but I've just gotten around to, you know, sleuthing through it and figuring out who everybody is. And it turns out actually that dad number two isn't my dad. And I guess, you know, CJ is my dad. And he was like, wow, that's, you know, kind of like, wow, that's crazy. Well, all I can tell you really, I haven't talked to him. I haven't seen him since I was 18. And before that, I hadn't seen him since I was 11. Definitely estranged. And I said, I'm sorry, that's hard. And he said, nope, it's fine. And I'm like, okay. And he also did add, you know, consider yourself lucky that you didn't know him. And I was like, okay, that's heavy, you know? So the other brother didn't respond, but then I guess the first brother told him, you know, and then once he told him, then he responded because he thought I was kind of, he thought maybe it was spam or something. He didn't open the message. So then, you know, there was a little bit of back and forth and I said, well, if you guys ever want to do 23andMe to like confirm, because they seemed sort of distant, like, how do we know, you know,
right.
how do we know you're wrong, not wrong sort of vibe. So I said, well, I'm going to do Ancestry because I was already had that kit cooking from, because Don said the whole family on Bruce's family was in Ancestry. So I already had that one cooking. I said, well, I have a profile in 23andMe, but I just sent off for Ancestry. And so then I think they did Ancestry. And then, you know, those kits take so long when you're,
when you're in these positions.
You're like, wow, take forever to get there. And then once they receive, you're like 3 weeks. That feels so long. And finally it came back as we were half siblings. And I was like, okay, it's true.
Eventually she gets CJ's contact info and they start communicating.
And we texted a little bit about talking and then we did finally talk. It was like a 2-hour conversation. It was kind of interesting because his recount of the situation with my mom was so different than my mom's. So I'm like texting my mom while I'm talking to him because I've.
In what way?
He was like, you know, was talking about like how they were like they were so in love and all this stuff. And I'm like, mom, he's saying you guys were in love and that it wasn't just one time at the skate park. And she goes, he thinks I'm somebody else. I bet he thinks I'm somebody else. She goes, there's no way that he was not my boyfriend. And I'm like, all right. And then, you know, I said, hey, my mom thinks you might have her mistaken for somebody else. And he goes, oh no, I remember her very well. And, you know, so I was sort of like, is he all the way in reality, or is this like wishful thinking, or is like my mom lying? You know, like that, those are the only two things. Like he, either he's lying or my mom's lying, or maybe he doesn't know he's lying and he is mixing her up with somebody else, you know? And my mom is like, Rebecca, I would tell you if this was like a different situation. She goes, but no, like I was a sophomore. He was a year older than me. And honestly, he had a girlfriend, like kind of, you know, like he was older. And she goes, and he was just like using me for a ride to the skate park. And I was just like, sure, I'll give you a ride to the skate park. He's making it sound like you, he's even telling me you did it. You did his homework for him. And she's like, what? She's like, I didn't even do my own homework. Why would I be doing his homework? She's like, he definitely has me mixed up with somebody else. And he was adamant, like, absolutely no, I don't have her mixed up. So like, okay, what? No. He was like, trust me, I remember Kim. I remember her so well. And she would make me sandwiches. And then I was like telling my mom like his recount of everything. She's like, what? She goes, the only person I ever made picnics for was your dad, Gene. Like when we were dating and you were a baby. She's like, before that, I was a kid. Like I wasn't doing people's homework or making sandwiches. She's like, he definitely thinks I'm somebody else. That's so it was so wild. Really funny. But then he did tell me this is interesting. He told me as my mom's neighbor was his friend from high school. And I guess he was over at his neighbor's house, or my mom's neighbor's house, saying, and the guy, he said, did you hear Kim is pregnant? You know, this is big news in the 70s. Like, and he said, and he was like, what? You know, instantly thought, oh crap, this could be my baby. And this, he's telling me this now as, you know, a 60-year-old man. He knew that it was inside somewhere. He knew it was his baby. And he left. He like got out of town as soon as possible. He was so scared or whatever. And he went to like, I think he said Ohio, or he joined the military. I forget. I mean, he mostly talked the whole 2+ hours. It was a lot to, you know, track.
In spite of the free sandwiches, he fucking left town.
Right. And those free rides to the skate park.
No homework.
I mean, yeah. I was like, wow, you are really just telling me that you actually did what my mom always accused Bruce of doing, which is so interesting, but like in a different way, you know? I was like, wow. So you like consciously left, like, I'm out of here.
And you had, I'm guessing you had no emotional reaction to that.
I was just like, wow, that's a story. Like, I didn't have as much, you know, context other than like maybe what a couple of his family members had told me about what his childhood was like. Sounds like he had a really, really rough childhood. So hearing this,
had he spent time in prison?
I was like, that tracks. And then he told me that, yeah, he had been in prison for attempted murder. That was a little scary. I was like, okay. And, but he had been out, he's been out, I think 13, 12 years or something. I forget. I was listening to a lot of talking. I didn't get very many words in edgewise. So, yeah.
So where are you now with, the two new half brothers? Are you close to them at all?
No, we just did those exchanges like, oh, cool, we're related.
Right.
And I think for my own sort of my own style, I think I sort of don't have it in me to be ultra vulnerable and ask like to have that, because I feel like me reaching out and contacting, that door's open, it's been cracked open, and then it's sort of the ball's in their court if they want to like kind of open it more. And we did a long correspondence where we were sending I was sending like genealogy things from 23 I'm sorry, from ancestry, especially the one brother who was like named, he's like the fourth or something. I'm like, if you go in ancestry, you can go all the way back to the very first that like immigrated over from France. And he was like, this is so cool. Like, so we had some cool exchanges about it. But I'm not going to like, you know, ask, beg or any of that for somebody to like want to have a relationship. It's sort of like, it's there, let me know. And that's where I've left it.
Thanks for coming on today. I've been kind of asking people this recently. What mm-hmm. do you think the name of this episode should be?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a hard on the spot. I think that there is something, I don't know, something about, you know, just my story to me, and this kind of came up when we were at my dad Gene's celebration of life, like talking about like, what is family? Like what is that definition? Like, clearly it's not just DNA. And it's not DNA, but is it, you know, like, what does that, what does that even mean? Because my dad, Gene, was like the ultimate dad, like raising somebody who you're not DNA related, I feel is like the greatest act of love. Like, it's a greater act of love than raising somebody that you made, like putting it all aside and like, loving somebody, choosing to versus feeling the obligation. So I don't know. I don't know how that answers your question. But
no, it gave me the name. The greatest act of love is what I'm going to name it.
Aw. Yeah, that's my dad, Gene. Yeah.
That's a perfect way to end it.
No.
Both of us crying.
Yeah.